Chapter 1. Problem. Innovation is no longer optional. Richard Branson, CEO of Virgin, said, "The way we live and the way we do business is changing like never before. Our growing interconnectedness is transforming the way the world works. As power shifts from the hands of central authors to the hands of the people, movements are becoming more powerful and moving more rapidly than ever before. It's a Dickens of a time. Those organizations that are leading change in the industries are winning. Those that are reacting to the forces of change are losing." During a recent speech at the UK Marketing Society's annual conference in London, I thought it would be funny to recite Charles Dickens. I said, "It is the best of times, it is the worst of times. It is the age of wisdom, it is the age of foolishness. It is the season of light, it is the season of darkness. We have everything before us, we have nothing before us. We are all going direct to heaven, we are all going direct the other way." A few laughed, most didn't. I would learn later that most saw it as a confirmation that today was indeed the worst of times. The life cycle from monopoly to commodity used to take decades. Today, because of the internet, it's often measured in less than a year. The consequence is acceleration of Joseph Schumpeter's creative destruction. Organizations that don't innovate are destroyed by those who have embraced a mindset of never-ending continuous innovation. The new reality was made clear following the recession of 2008. When the marketplace didn't bounce back like it had in the past. The good news from my perspective is that the world as we knew it is never coming back. The world has changed, rewarding those who innovate and destroying the profitability of those that don't. A survey of CEOs we conducted in 2011 for the U.S. Department of Commerce quantified the gap between those who innovate and those who don't. The survey found that those who had an innovation mindset following the recession realized significantly better business results 3 years after the recession of 2008. Sales growth, plus 84% for innovators versus plus 4% for non-innovators. Profit growth, plus 96% for innovators versus plus 13% for non-innovators. Employee growth, plus 64% for innovators versus plus 1% for non-innovators. A similar study with CEOs of companies in Ireland found nearly identical results. I found similar patterns in qualitative interviews in Korea, Vietnam, Turkey, Mexico, Spain, and Italy. Today we live in a global economy. And no matter where you live, if you're not meaningfully unique, you better be cheap. The root cause for the differences in results was that when the recession hit, those who embraced innovation quickly pivoted. They changed their offerings, realizing nearly double the percentage of company sales in products or service that they didn't offer 3 years before, 37% versus 19%. They also went after new customers, nearly doubling the percentage of sales from new customers versus 3 years before, 43%. Versus 23%. It's not a theory. The pace of business has really changed. In the past, there was little urgency to change what we offer or how we work. It was possible to create a for-profit or nonprofit company based on an innovative service or product and to market it to the same customers for years. Over the career of most senior leaders, the life cycle of profitability for new products and services has been long. It has not been uncommon for a company founder to innovate and for the life cycle of their offerings to last for two generations. Children of innovators, if they manage the family business right, could have a great career. By the third generation, the marketplace usually changes such that the organization's offerings need to be reinvented if the organization is to survive. Sadly, most don't, and only 3% of family businesses make it to the fourth generation. In the past, it has also been possible to succeed even with an inferior product or service in your region. This was because customers didn't know there were other alternatives available in their town or country or the world that offered greater value for the money. The internet has changed everything. Today, customers have the ability to know more about what alternatives exist in the world. It gives them the ability to painlessly compare value for the money. It also gives them the ability to share experiences with other buyers, making it hard for companies to make false promises. For example, when you put a new design skin on the same old product, customers quickly figure out that your improvement is just skin deep. Today, a business doesn't last for a generation. In many industries, product or service life cycles are now months or years. Timed out. A friend of 25 years told me recently that he has timed out. He went on to explain, "Doug, the world has changed, and I'm no longer relevant or respected." Timed out. It's a concept that the innovation engineering pioneers and myself just don't get. Timed out is something that happens when you stop learning and growing. Timed out is something that happens when you're dead. With the timed out mindset, great wisdom is prematurely lost to the organization. Yes, the world has changed. However, what's needed is for those with 30 plus years of experience to fully engage in gaining a working understanding of the new opportunities that technology makes possible. Then they need to commit themselves to mentoring the next generation of leaders just like they were taught when they were younger. A mindset of timed out is sad. Worse than that is the selfish mindset. It exists across industries, for-profit, non-profit, companies large and small. It goes something like this. I have 2, maybe 4 years till retirement. I think I can make it without changing. Or, I am close to being eligible to take early retirement. I don't want to do anything that will risk it. This mindset is selfish. It causes deep, deep resentment among younger workers who still have marriages, young children, or college bills to pay off in their future. They feel betrayed as the older workers who they've looked up to for years suddenly are exposed as frauds in their mind. And we wonder why younger generations are not engaged? The innovation engineering pioneers believe that the internet, with its transparency and increased cycle speed, is a great thing. It creates separation between those who are dead and those who are alive. It rewards those with the courage to create differences that matter. It makes it easier to connect with new customers around the world. Today is a repeat of history. The internet has created an exponential growth in our ability to exchange information. On a much smaller scale, a similar increase occurred at the turn of the century before last in the USA. From 1870 to 1910, there was an explosive growth in the ability of the marketplace to exchange information. During this time period, over 5 million phones were installed. Railroads developed into an efficient national network, and the concepts of brands and national advertising were born. In just 4 years, from 1871 to 1875, the number of brands with registered trademarks grew nearly tenfold, from 121 to 1,138. The consequence of this increased exchange of information was a marketplace that was closer to a true free market economy. As customers had more information, they could compare the value they received for the money. Those merchants who didn't offer a meaningful point of difference, such as value for the money, soon lost sales and died. Because the change in exchanging information came faster than most companies were ready for, the impact on the economy was deflation, as companies had to cut price to win back sales. In total, there was a 30% decrease in the Consumer Price Index during this time period. The internet creates 1,000x greater disruption than the introduction of railroads and national advertising. Now everyone can know everything about a product. Differences that are, quote, marketing smoke and mirrors are quickly exposed. Having lots of money to spend on marketing is no longer a cure for mediocre nonprofit services or commercial offerings. Today's growth and our ability to exchange information is exponential. Steve Wozniak, co-founder of the Apple Computer Company, said, quote, "The internet really is the biggest innovation in history. It's more important than the computer, even more important than the transistor. The internet came and everything became for everyone. We were set free." Today, around 40% of the world population has an internet connection. In 1995, it was less than 1%. There are now 250 million registered domain names. The impact of the internet is greater than simply to text or look up information. It's igniting new infrastructures and systems. As an example, having something shipped to my rural farmhouse on the north shore of Prince Edward Island, Canada, historically took up to 2 weeks. Today, I can have almost anything I want shipped to me with free delivery in 2 days. For the first time, there are even UPS brown trucks and FedEx trucks traveling the island. I think that Prince Edward Island will find in time that the exchange of information and infrastructure systems, like shipping, will have a greater impact on the economy of the island than the 12.9 kilometer bridge to the mainland that opened in 1997. The impact will be positive when they learn that, like the bridge, change goes both ways. The new marketplace makes it possible to live in a paradise like Prince Edward Island and do business across planet Earth. David Carr wrote in the New York Times, "Change comes very slowly, but then happens all at once. The future, as it always does, sets its own schedule." Hint: if your goal is to make money, innovation is the only choice. Recently, a CEO told me, "We're conservative. We're slow to change." Or as another CEO told me, "Doug, I don't get it. I don't know how to innovate. My team doesn't know how to innovate. And frankly, my customers have never asked us to innovate. Why the focus on innovation?" Well, if a purpose of your company is to make money, or if a desire of your nonprofit is to survive and sustain, then innovation is your only choice. Researchers at Georgia Tech have compared companies' self-reported strategies for success versus the profit margins they realize. Their conclusion is simple. If you want to make more money, innovation is the only strategy. Companies pursuing innovation as their core business strategy realize 50 to 100% higher profit margins, than those who pursue low cost, high quality, fast delivery, or even voice of the customer, that is, doing whatever the customer says. Basic economic theory predicts these results. When you offer something that is meaningful and that no one else offers, you have a monopoly, resulting in higher profitability. It's the best time to be in business. The interconnected marketplace is creating exciting opportunities for increasing innovation speed. Just as it's empowering customers, it's empowering companies. Proactive leaders can discover and develop breakthrough technologies with faster speed and less risk if they upgrade their management and innovation systems to leverage the opportunity present in the new marketplace. Evidence of the rising ability to innovate is the number of patent filings in the USA. The USA is a great barometer. As the market is big, and many of the world's patent offices use the US filings as benchmarks. Historically, patent filings have grown at a slow and stable rate. However, as the number of internet users around the world has grown, so too has the number of patent filings. The internet has enabled inventors and entrepreneurs to make technical connections, conduct patent searches, and find opportunities faster than ever before. It has made it the best of times to be an inventor. Interestingly, 2 out of 3 patents filed in the USA are granted to someone either born outside the USA or to a company from outside the USA. To paraphrase a line from Bruce Springsteen, born in the USA, owned in the USA, is not the way with technology anymore. The internet is making it easy for everyone on planet Earth to innovate. In fact, somewhere in South Korea, Northern Ireland, or South Africa, there's someone with an idea, some education, and a ton of motivation to disrupt your company, industry, and career. The classic management system can't keep up with the new rate of change. When the pace of change was slower, it was possible to treat strategy, innovation, and the way we work together as independent functions, just as Henry Ford segmented work on the production line. However, as the world moves faster, we don't have the time for the inevitable meetings, communications, miscommunications, and rework that are created by the classic command and control management system. The challenge today's leaders face is that as the life cycle has accelerated, their method of management has not adapted to the new pace of change. The classic method of managing innovation as a department or as something led by specialists is just not fast enough anymore. What's needed is a culture in which innovation is the mission of everyone, everywhere, every day. A culture in which innovation is enabled through scalable education systems and tools. The result being an amplification of the effectiveness of employees, just as a tractor amplifies the amount of land a farmer can work versus a horse and plow. To restart success for organizations that are victims of change, cost-cutting won't solve the problem. Working harder won't solve the problem. Beating the workers won't solve the problem. The only sustainable solution to the accelerated pace of change is to create a culture of innovation. The 5 false innovation cures. Growing an innovation culture is hard. It's really hard. The existing infrastructure has evolved over time to be 100% focused on decreasing risk. And as the marketplace changes faster, the culture responds by amplifying its avoidance of risk. Worse yet, we are organized in companies the same way we were in universities, in departmental silos. Each worker reports to a head of a silo, be it manufacturing, marketing, product development, finance, legal, market research, or sales. The corporate system rewards loyalty to the silo more than to the organization. It is the silo that gives us a pay raise. It is the silo that prevents us from being laid off or downsized. It is very easy for every silo to do a perfect job, but collectively, the organization is not effective. Dr. Deming spoke about how everyone applying their best efforts, working with diligence, can still result in the company going out of business. The reason is that the success of an organization lies in the interactions between the people, processes, and departments. Getting the system to work is so difficult that most leaders are not willing to take on this challenge. As the CEO of a Fortune 50 company told me, "I don't have the energy to change the system. When it comes to innovation, our system is broken. That's why I've set up these special teams working outside the system." When a leader is ready to confront the reality that 1, they need to innovate to compete in today's marketplace, and 2, the current system for innovation management doesn't work, they frequently seek out one or more of what the innovation engineering pioneers call false cures. These are simplistic management fixes that sound promising, but in the long term, often cause more harm than good. False cure number 1, more inspection, metrics, and bigger rewards. The hypothesis is, If management reviews the development of innovations more frequently and diligently, then innovation success will be realized. The truth is, inspection for quality doesn't work. Just as in the factory, innovation quality must be built into the organization's work systems and tools. A related hypothesis is that if we manage by metrics and reward people for hitting the numbers, then innovation success will be realized. The truth is that metrics without a method simply creates stress that ignites the gaming of the system to hit the numbers. Metrics are invaluable when used as a tool for improving the system. They are destructive when used as a means for motivating. Metrics are the outcome of the system. Sustained improvement in metrics only occurs with improvements in the methods and tools that make up the work system. Success with innovation requires intrinsic passion and dedication. The promise of extrinsic rewards will not sustain innovators through the inevitable ups and downs that occur when trying to discover and develop a meaningfully unique innovation. As Dr. Deming and others have taught, extrinsic beating of workers or bribery of workers only serves to increase fear and decrease intrinsic motivation. With innovation engineering, we have two measures that we use to quantify progress. Our innovation system measure is the weighted value of the innovation pipeline. This is a measure of the value of all organizational projects for savings and growth that are in development. Each project is aligned to a strategic priority called a blue card in the language of innovation engineering. The value of each project is weighted based on where it is in the development process versus historical norms of what value will be realized when the product is made real and/or ships into the marketplace. No metric is more important to your future bottom line than the weighted value of all of the ideas that are in your innovation pipeline. Our innovation culture measure is what percent of the time employees are engaged in proactive versus reactive work. When employees are 100% reactive, their days are spent fighting fires and in wasteful rework. When employees spend a high percentage of their time being proactive, their days are focused on anticipating the future. When a culture is proactive instead of reactive, employee engagement, productivity, and effectiveness are much higher. This is because employees feel a sense of control over their future instead of feeling they are simply victims of external circumstances. These two measures, innovation pipeline, weighted value, and proactive culture, are the foundations of innovation engineering. There are other metrics, independent variables that are predictive of these two measures, such as average cycle time for learning, time to development decisions, collaboration levels, database decision making, training levels, and patent filings. False cure number two, the big idea hunt. The hypothesis is, if the organization just had more big ideas going into the organization's innovation pipeline, then all would be great. In truth, more stuff going into the front end of a broken system doesn't result in bigger ideas becoming reality. Most development systems reduce all ideas, no matter how big they are, into the same old stuff. As one company leader, who is part of the movement, said, every big idea that we put into our system comes out looking like a minor variation of something we currently offer. We need to fix our system. The foolishness of the big idea hunt was made clear in a famous study of technology transfer by the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, or MIT. The study went over 16 years. It found that when a large company licensed a big idea technology from MIT and put it into their existing development system, 80% of the time they ended up failing. Most MIT innovations died in development and never made it to market. False cure number 3, skunkworks teams. The hypothesis is, the only way to make sure that real innovations survive is to manage them outside of the existing culture. The truth is that in most cases, the innovations will eventually need to use the infrastructure. And when they do, the culture strikes back, resulting in disruption, chaos, and the eventual failure of the skunkworks. Skunkworks is the name for Lockheed Martin's Advanced Development Program. It was responsible for a number of famous aircraft designs. The name Skunk Works is thought to have come from the Moonshine Factory in the comic strip Little Abner. Unlike many current Skunk Works teams, Lockheed Martin's Skunk Works team was successful because they operated 100% outside of the organization, from idea through production to sales and delivery to customers. They were a complete freestanding business operation. And this was easier for them to do as they sold to one customer, the military. For much of my career, I was a vigorous advocate for skunkworks teams. I've led or helped coach hundreds of these teams around the world. However, after 40 plus years of experience, I've come to the conclusion that my mindset was wrong. I now believe that working with and upgrading the existing culture by enabling the leadership and employees with system-driven innovation is the only sustainable and reliable path that a company can use to create a never-ending stream of innovation. Initially, the skunkworks teams generate the perception of success. This is because they spend the majority of their time on the innovation as opposed to the system. However, eventually the success vaporizes as an open or passive-aggressive civil war occurs when the new innovation needs to access resources within the existing organization. At around 18 months, the team ends up spending more time trying to convince those in the system to support their breakthrough than they spend on the idea itself. As momentum stalls, those within the system point out the waste of time and energy, and slowly but surely the leadership gives up the venture and or the team members give up and quit the company. The failure of skunkworks projects is regrettable. However, my bigger reason for no longer supporting this result has to do with basic human rights. It's not fair to enable some within the organization the freedom to think and create cool stuff outside the system using advanced tools and methods, while at the same time shackling others with working within a bureaucratic prison. When the CEO stands up and celebrates a team that innovates outside the system, what message do you think it sends to the others? Those in the existing system have ideas too. They can make ideas happen. They could do amazing things if they had the same training and tools as the innovators in the skunkworks. False cure number 4. Buy an innovation culture. The hypothesis is, if we just acquire a small entrepreneurial company, a miracle will occur to transform our culture. This is a more expensive variation of the skunkworks approach. And like many of these approaches, it gives a message to the culture that they are stupid and the new company team is smart. This creates discontent and disengagement within the existing culture. The result is often conscious or subconscious resistance to the new ideas. This is one of a number of reasons why independent research and a Harvard Business Review article finds that 70 to 90% of mergers and acquisitions fail financially. In addition, there is no real opportunity for learning when you buy a successful company. The biggest learning has already happened. It was the startup years of trying and pivoting, learning and pivoting. False cure number 5, be a fast follower. The hypothesis is, if we give up being first to market, we can reduce our risk. The problem with this approach is that if the pioneer is really good, then as a provider of copycat products, our only choice is to sell our offerings at a lower price. Multiple research studies documented in my book, Meaningful Marketing, finds that on average, Fast followers generate half the profits of the pioneer. And it's also not very motivating to be an employee of a company that dedicates itself to being a follower. Great people want to do great things. They want to be part of an organization that leads change instead of simply reacting to others. Innovation requires a flip of mindset. It is rare that anyone loves their existing innovation system. Despite what some may think, no one gets up in the morning and says, "I love to work in an inefficient bureaucracy." Rather, they feel they have no choice because they don't feel they can change the system. They follow the rules of the system because, frankly, they see it as less painful than trying to work outside the system. What's ironic is that while companies are addicted to cost-cutting, there's probably no greater waste of time, energy, and money than inefficiencies within the existing systems, regardless of how new ideas and innovations are supposed to occur. Upgrading an innovation system requires a flip of mindset. It requires an acceptance of the basic Deming premise that 94% of the challenge lies in the system and 6% a result of the worker. Upgrading an innovation system might well be the greatest legacy of a leader. A.G. Lafley, retired CEO of Procter & Gamble, in his book The Game Changer, puts the new mindset towards innovation this way. Quote, "My job at Procter & Gamble is focused on integrating innovation into everything we do. Every business has some central organizing principle that people use as the basis for making decisions, meeting challenges, and creating opportunities. From P&G, it is innovation. Innovation must be the central driving force for any business that wants to grow and succeed in both the short and long terms. We live in a time when the rate of change is such that today's unique product or service becomes tomorrow's commodity. Winning, playing the game better than your competitors and changing the game when necessary, requires finding a new way to sustain organic revenue and profit growth and consistently improve margins. This means seeing innovation not as something left to the R&D department, but as the central foundation in the way you run your business, driving key decisions, be they choice of goals, strategy, innovation structure, resource allocation, commitment to budgets, or development of leadership. All too often, managers decide on a business strategy, what markets to pursue, and what products to make, then turn to innovation to support it. This is the wrong way around. Innovation needs to be put in the center of the business in order to choose the right goals and business strategy and make how to win choices. It is the central job of every leader, business unit managers, functional leaders, and the CEO. The CEO, in fact, must also be the CIO, the Chief Innovation Officer. Innovation is the foundation for controlling your destiny. It was for P&G, in my experience, the real game changer. The real source of sustainable competitive advantage and the most reliable engine of sustainable growth. Innovation is the answer. So, what did you learn? Step back and think. What did you learn from this chapter? What confirmed what you already knew? What challenged your pre-existing beliefs? As the world has changed, how have you changed? For your organization, is today the best of times or the worst of times? For your career, is today the best of times or the worst of times? And lastly, are you optimistic or pessimistic about your ability to face the new realities in the marketplace?